We are back on the Big Talker, 106.7 FM, 7 minutes past the top of the hour. Great 60-minute session with you to open the broadcast. Back and better than ever here at BigTalkerFM.com. Through social media on Facebook and Twitter, you can find us at the Big Talker, 106.7 FM. I'm channeling my inner Mike Gundy this morning. He's, or was, I don't know if he still is, the head football coach at Oklahoma State University. Because we've got callers who agree, disagree, bringing up other valid points. Very passionate today. We, of course, have this very unique platform where we allow and interact with listeners all day. We're not hiding in a little cubby here writing some editorial piece that'll go out there and, you know, then you stir it up on social media. We engage in vocal back and forth. So, and channeling my inner Mike Gundy, I'm a man. I'm 40. Well, almost 40. I can take it. Keep it coming. Beauty of the business. Some people love you. Some people hate you. Some people love to hate you. And this is where we're at. By the way, the people's business went on last night after the chaos. Thousands of small businesses across the country can't say the same this morning, by the way. Pete Callender is with us from the western part of the state, and he's been with us now a few times as we tap into his insight from the mountains to the coast, everywhere in between, covering statewide news. Pete, it's great to have you on. Happy New Year, my man.
Same to you, Joe. Thanks for having me back.
So, I mean, all right, let's start with, obviously, and we've had the last hour. I've never had more phone calls on a program than I did through the first hour today. I gave thoughts, people reacted. I'm getting people calling our office line, leaving messages, and it's actually pretty funny, and it's exciting. You know, you've been in talk radio for a long time. Sometimes these types of situations, not that it's very, pretty to talk about, but when the tides turn a little bit and it's the Republicans with their backs against the wall and going on out on offense, sometimes this is as best to talk radio. This is why this platform was invented.
Yeah, it's also the platform that and format that a lot of other media try to replicate, right? Whether it's C-SPAN taking callers with their dedicated lines, or it's television news outlets that try to take, live reports from people over the phone, or it's, the digital platform. Yeah, there's a lot of different platforms that try to mimic what radio does. And that's always been where radio, I think, has always shined, is in the ability to obviously get breaking news immediately, get it right on the air, but also to allow, I always refer to it as sort of a general store kind of atmosphere where, people come in, there's folks that kind of hang out all day at the store, but then a lot of people just come in, get what they need and leave. And they may overhear some people chit chatting about, the affairs of the day and may add something and may not. And so it's always just kind of been that kind of a place for people to discuss things. And I think right now that's more valuable than ever.
With that said, all the attention on Washington, D.C. yesterday, and, I guess all in all, Governor Roy Cooper, this guy knows how to politic. I mean, he had all understanding that the eyes were going to be on Washington, D.C., and boy, were they. And then he slides in a little news briefing. By the way, we're worst in the nation in distributing the coronavirus vaccine, and here's what I'm going to do about it. Interesting to see how that all lined up.
Well, and it's also, there are connections here to what we saw in North Carolina, even beyond just this COVID response. But, people are pushed right now, I would submit, to very near the breaking point, mentally, financially, emotionally. It's for the last year, people have felt under siege. And part of that is beyond anybody's ability to to minimize, because it's a virus, it's a contagious virus. I am not of the belief that COVID-19 doesn't exist or that it's just a bad flu. I do believe it. It is serious. But then you also have a lot of these elected officials that are not behaving as if it is as serious as they are telling us it is, which creates this cognitive dissonance. You have people, human beings, that need social interaction, that need physical touch, right? People need these things. And you have government officials telling them, no, you can't do that. Prolonged lockdowns do not work. That, I think, is why they came out yesterday with this secretarial directive, which is essentially the same thing that Cooper has mandated in the past, but now it's not a mandate. Now it's just guidance. It's a directive. Like, please stay home. Don't leave the house except for essential activities. And while that's preferable in my mind than government mandates, I think it also is indicative of their recognition that they can't do a lockdown. They can't force people any longer to stay in their homes and be recluses and hermits. Now, I think if we had, you know, a media that was capable, apparently, of asking skeptical questions of this governor, then maybe somebody would have said, well, does this prove that your previous lockdowns were inappropriate, ineffective? They didn't work. But nobody asks him that question, just like nobody asked him, to your point, about whether or not the vaccine distribution and the problems we're having, which are among the worst in the nation. But nobody challenges him on that. They just say, what are you going to do to make it better? It's never any kind of a skeptical or challenging approach that, dare I say, were he a Republican, he might probably face.
Why is it seems across all media these days, and that's from the highest levels, the national, all the way down here to the local level, it seems as if the reporters just kind of lead their interviewee or the person that they're challenging or trying to pull information from, they lead them to where they want to go rather than, you know, push back on them. As you said, like a Republican typically gets pushed back, i.e. Governor Ron DeSantis the other day, when there were some things going on within the hospitals, and he and the CNN reporter got in a pretty good exchange. And he was just like, listen, you trust the state to do better than the hospital and the healthcare networks out there, the experts, and just threw it back into her. But it seemed as if the Republicans are always in the ones getting into these tussles. And when the Democrat comes along, they just get the spoon fed the information. OK, here's the platform. Just say what you have to say.
I think it's the same dynamic that we see with the storming of the Capitol as well. And you have a lot of people on the right that want to dismiss it as, oh, this was Antifa that was somehow, you know, infiltrated and they were the reason why. It's very difficult to condemn your own allies, because when you're in the kind of culture war that we are in, people tend to overlook the transgressions of their allies because they know they need the bodies. They know they need the fighters on their side. And if you start picking off your own allies, you understand just, you know, instinctively that you're going to be weaker for it. And I think that's the case with a lot of media people as well, that they approach Republicans differently than they approach Democrats because they view their job differently when a Republican wields the power, because they have a different assumption about why Republicans wield the power and why Democrats do. I think that's part of it. They view Democrats as more of their allies than their adversaries. So I think that is that's a large part of it. But the other one is just a mechanism of the way the job is done. Reporters, particularly in larger operations, television, for example, they'll sit around with their assignment editors and news managers, and they decide at the beginning of the day what stories to go cover. And if you pitch a story, then they slot you that story in their newscast, or some, as they call it, their show, their 5 o'clock show. They'll slot that. And if you don't get that story turned, you got to make slot, because otherwise, what are you going to run for 2 minutes during the newscast? Right. So if you have an idea and you pitch that idea, then, and you know the governor's going to do a news conference, you're going to ask him a question that gets you a soundbite that you can plug into your story, rather than wait for the story to just develop on its own naturally and then report what happened. And I'm not saying that never occurs, but if you're covering a press conference, you can direct the story to induce a soundbite that then you can plug right into your story. So it's a number of things, and it depends on the reporters too, obviously.
Pete Callender with us here this morning. He hosts the daily podcast covering state national issues from a North Carolina perspective. You can find more about what he does at thepetecallendershow.com. Pete, at the end of the day, yesterday, as much of an embarrassment it was, and that's what it was, and I know we've got callers who disagree with what it was. At the end of the day, though, 200, and I started the day off yesterday not knowing, of course, that there would be a breach of the U.S. Capitol. One, I wasn't very interested in watching what was going on. I made mention of that yesterday. I'm like, we laid out the case with our local congressman as far as why he would be challenging the certification. And I think there are some things there that, are, of course, are now lost because of what we saw play out. in Congress, and hopefully we are able to take and challenge our Board of Elections, our state lawmakers into the future to make sure the quote-unquote integrity of the vote is set to the highest standard. But at the end of the day, you know, no matter the instincts of leaders throughout the 240-plus years of this country, at the end of the day, the systems, Pete, they held in place. Congress went back to work last night, and they certified the election. They did its duty. That's a win, as ugly as it looked, no, for democracy and the republic, as ugly as it looked.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had to. They were left with no other choice, because this is why you don't negotiate with terrorists, right? And by the way, this is what people like me have been warning the left about for years, that when you normalize and dismiss and give a wink-wink to political violence by your allies, you guys are really not going to like it when your adversaries start adopting your tactics. And that's what we saw yesterday. So yes, there's this rush to condemn, but you know, I've been condemning political violence when they were burning cities down, right? I've been condemning this kind of approach to governing for years. And I was always just dismissed, if you don't understand why they're burning down the Walmart and looting it, well, then you're a racist. You know, and this is part of what has frustrated so many people. The media is part of it. People do not trust the media. And here's a question, like, if you have all of the evidence that the elections were rigged, which, by the way, a lot of the evidence is based on what? It's based on these lawsuits that were filed by Democrats that were then that then garnered these collusive agreements with Democrat state officials to change election laws, sometimes during the voting period, right? In North Carolina, that happened. So you have that as a sort of a foundation. So now people are automatically suspicious of everything that's occurring. So nobody's blameless here in whipping these passions up. And but of course, everybody rushes to condemn the other guy because, you know, you guys are responsible for this. Whereas, you know, 6 months ago when we were watching cities burn, oh, well, now you just need to understand that this is just a form of protest and it's not really insurrection. I call that insurrection when it happened 6 months ago. I call this insurrection as well.
I think, and that's the biggest embarrassment of this all, is that our quote unquote leaders can't call out their own because of one reason or the other.
Yeah.
And we watched it from March until May, until towards the end of the year, just a constant chaos in the streets. And, also pointed out that, there are thousands of businesses here this morning, Pete, that are still uncertain about their future or mm-hmm. are still picking up the pieces because their businesses were rioted, looted, or shut down because of government overreach in the past year. The people's business went on last night in the Capitol. Thousands of business owners can't say the same here today.
No, yeah, I do agree. And, the people who were at the march, and they have every right to be there. They have every right to their opinions. And by the way, I also wonder, like, what is the venue and who would be the judges to determine whether fraud occurred? Is there any standard for them that would suffice for right. an investigation? What proof would need to be presented that it wasn't rigged to the extent that it affected the outcome of the election, right? So I'm unclear as to how that happens. But I also don't have a problem with people objecting to the certification because of these very things. I don't know how you win back the credibility that these institutions have frittered away over the course of decades. And that's really where we are right now, is that people don't know who to trust, and they see one side getting preferable treatment, and they realize, well, if I can do these things and not suffer repercussions. I mean, how many people engaged in violent insurrectionist activities for the last year and were never charged, right? Or had charges, but then had them dropped. So at some point, the message becomes clear that this is how you get what you want. And we either as a society say that political violence is not okay, or we say that it is. And once you say it is, then this is the cycle we're going to be in for a very long time. And that, I fear, is going to lead to the destruction of the system. Now, I don't know what you tell people who believe the election was rigged and stolen, as the president does repeatedly, and then tell them, don't do these things, because it seems like if you believe it was all stolen, then it's almost like you have a duty to be a revolutionary, don't you? So I don't know how you convey the message that, oh, it was all stolen and it was all illegal, it was all unlawful and unconstitutional, but don't take any steps to remedy that, because if you do, then that's unconstitutional as well. So I'm unclear how you balance those two ideas.
Pete Callender with us. The PeteCallenderShow.com, his website, daily podcast, picking up on issues all across our state and the nation. Pete, bringing it back to North Carolina and the governor's news conference yesterday, of course, as we made mention, the state lags behind the rest of the nation pretty much, as it does with the distribution of unemployment benefits. We can talk about hurricane relief money and go, and the line goes down to that. You want to talk about rape kits, whatever, we want to pick up the day here, we can run with. But in this case, obviously COVID still, well, is COVID still around given that all the attention now is on Washington, D.C.? Who knows?
Well, I will say We apparently solved and cured the flu. I noticed that. So yay us, we cured the flu this year. I'm not sure how that happened, although I guess some folks are saying it's because we're all wearing masks. So it cures the flu, but not COVID, which is weird because they're both airborne contagions. I'm not sure, but that's what I'm led to believe.
I did a little experiment this morning because it was, 30 degrees outside, a little warmer here, 35 degrees, say 38 maybe here. But you could still see the breath coming out of the air coming out of your mouth as you breathed. And I was walking here and I just said, 5 o'clock in the morning, I'll throw my mask on. And wow, you could sure see all that stuff coming out of my mouth as I took deep breaths. So I'm still wondering what the whole mask thing is about.
Well, I will.
Pete, tell me, just over 1.3% of our population has received the first dose of the vaccine so far. What's behind this lag? What's being done by the governor?
The problem is, I think that the governor has created a distribution priority list that's just far too complex. And it relies on, social justice inputs, that we want to make sure that historically marginalized populations are getting access to it. I think that's part of it. It's just overly complex. And that's because of political reasons. I think also part of it is that you have a lot of people that are wary of it for various reasons. A lot of people that don't want to take it because, Donald Trump is behind it. And a lot of people who don't want to take it because they're suspicious of government. You have a lot of healthcare people that don't want to take it. People who already had COVID probably don't feel like they need to take it. I think if you want to vaccinate as many people as possible, as quickly as possible to get us to herd immunity, I think you just make them available. First come, first serve, get them done. And you make it available to the older people first. I think you should follow a model that looks more like the Israeli model, where they're getting people vaccinated much more rapidly than we are. But of course, nobody's going to ask the governor these types of questions because they don't want to get cut out of his press conferences, I guess.
The Pete Callender Show airs daily, his podcast at thepetecallendershow.com. Pete, lastly, some other news outside of Washington and, COVID. The governor, over this past week, made an appointment to our Court of Appeals. Yeah. And, of course, this week has been a big week for Republican-leaning type judges. Obviously, we had Justice Paul Newby, two others on the Supreme Court, the Court of Appeals. Goes to a few winners as well. But what's with this appointment? Darren Jackson, who was the minority leader in the State House last session, has been appointed by Governor Cooper to the North Carolina Court of Appeals. What's his qualifications to sit on the bench here?
Well, he's a Democrat. That's the number one. Number two, he is a Democrat in good standing with the governor. He's also a lawyer, but he's never been a judge, as far as I know. So why not elevate him to the second highest court in the state? And look, Darren Jackson was a lawmaker, and up until this past election, he was the House Minority Leader. So he was the leader of the House Democratic Caucus, and I've engaged with him in the past on social media, and he is a partisan. Okay, he's a partisan, as you would expect a leader of a caucus to be, to a large degree. And elevating him to the Court of Appeals is particularly hypocritical, in my view, because here is the Democratic Party and the governor and Darren Jackson himself. When the Republicans were saying we should put the D's and the R's on the ballot by the judges' names so we can know whether a judge is a Democrat or Republican, and their Democrats screamed bloody murder about that, saying that we were politicizing the courts, that this made the courts partisan. Yet here you go and take a seat that was held by a Republican and you put in Darren Jackson, the House Minority Leader. Like, how is that not doing the very thing you accused Republicans of doing by simply telling voters who's a Democrat, who's a Republican on their ballots. It's just, it's the height of hypocrisy. But of course, it doesn't get that kind of framing. It doesn't get, you know, viewed through that prism because it's what I call the big D shield. It's when you're a Democrat, you get protected from a lot of those types of narratives.
You know, it seems like within the Democrat Party, they're always, you know, aligned one way or the other. You know, as you know, our mothers once told us, if your friends jump off the bridge, would you do it too? Well, it seems like Democrats are okay with that. On the right side of things, and oftentimes the case, people like yourself, me, among others, who may align, you know, towards that center right on the political spectrum. We're often extremely critical of our own. And one thing is constant. The GOP, the center right, is always at odds with one another. Is that an accurate assessment of the general, you know, political spectrum the way we see it today?
I think a lot of it is based on who's in the majority and who's in the minority when you're talking about at a state level or a national level. I think it's way easier when you're in a minority party status. It's way easier to all band together, because you have to, and there's a common enemy, so to speak, and they're in charge. And so anything that they're for, you're going to be against. And that's a very cohesive kind of a caucus to keep together. But when you attain the majority, now you've got the different factions that existed before, but now there's going to be more of them because you're in the majority. But also, you're going to have more more power, more leverage to get what you want. And so you're going to have to try to maneuver inside your bigger tent. And I think that just is how it kind of manifests itself. When you're in the majority, it looks like you splinter more than in the minority, because you have to stick together to get stuff done. And I think both parties actually believe that the other party is way more unified and together, because I see Democrats say the same thing about Republicans. They do. They're like, we should be like Republicans, you know, and stick together. And like, they're ruthless. They do. And meanwhile, Republicans say the exact same thing about the Democrats.
Pete, as I let you go, you know, over the course of the holiday break, talking about powerful lawmakers and state lawmakers at that, guy by the name of Mark Basnight that passed away. You know, I've been here for 15 years, 16 years, so know of him, don't know of his true influence across our state, other than when I travel from, you know, Hatteras to Nag's Head, that beautiful bridge that they've got, you know, crossing the Sound, the Atlantic Ocean is in his name. Tell me about Mark Basnight and you know, his legacy in North Carolina politics.
So this was also an interesting story to watch develop. And my sincere condolences to his family, and what he suffered from was an awful disease. I had a friend who died of it. It's terrible. But the gauzy kind of focus that was given to his machine that he helped to build it and to lead it, and the idea that, oh, this was, you know, Mark Basnight, he was just a good guy with a good heart and built a political machine. Like, this political machine, the Jim Hunt machine, this ran the state for over a century and a half, and it was built on a spoils system. It was built on patronage, and by the end of it, when it all collapsed in 2010, it was, you know, rife with corruption. People went to prison, and you know, and it was all pay to play. And so I'm not a fan of that machine. And by the way, people who think that it's all over now, you know, Roy Cooper was part of that machine too. So he's governor now. Do you think that all those people just disappeared? No, they're still, you know, being appointed by Cooper to various positions. So I'm not as big a fan of the political legacy that Mark Basnight left. But I do think he was one of the more old school kind of Democrats that could not get elected in today's climate, just because, for one, he's pro-life. He was pro-life. And so I don't think he would ever be able to win election now in the Democratic Party.
Well, we know the last time a Democrat lawmaker in our state voted for some type of pro-life piece of legislation, what was that, Senator from Greenville, and he joined Republicans in the Born Alive veto. He had websites taken out against him, was going to get a primary. I mean, this guy was getting ready to, you know, dig his own grave.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's not a position that will win you a lot of support any longer in the Democratic Party. And that really is the, in my view, that's sort of the dividing line. If generally speaking, if you're a Democrat, you are not pro-life, or you're pro-choice, I should say. And if you are, if you're a Republican, then you tend to be pro-life, although there are a lot of pro-choicers in that camp. But I just don't see, it's more of a litmus test over on the left than it is on the right, I think.
Pete, you do a great job. We love your insight, and we'll get you back on soon.
Thanks for the chance to hang out with you. I appreciate it, and Happy New Year to you and your audience.
Great to be with you here this morning. The Pete Callender Show, a daily podcast covering issues all across the state and nation. You can find out what he does at thepetecallendershow.com. Great friend and contributor to the program here on the Big Talker FM. We've hit the bottom of the hour. Your phone calls for the next.